Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, April 11th. County approves Spaceport Development Corporation. Spaceport Corporation will allow local leaders to seek funding from the state. Midland City Council to vote on its own resolution today. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. The Midland County Commissioners Court approved a resolution to authorize the creation of the Midland Spaceport Development Corporation on Monday. Sarah Harris from the Midland Development Corporation said the establishment of the Spaceport Corporation will enable Midland to be eligible for funding from the state. County commissioners approved their half of the interlocal agreement. The City of Midland must approve it as well. The Midland City Council will take up the item at its meeting at 10 a.m. Tuesday. According to Harris, there was previously a Spaceport Development Corporation in Midland in 2014, but it was dissolved in 2020. Harris said it is now the right time to reform it. Last month, Kepler Aerospace announced a partnership with Space Nation to bring space simulations to Midland. The co-founder of Space Nation, Kali Vahajakola, summed up the possibility of Midland being the future destination for American space travel. Quote, "Midland connects the resourcefulness of pioneers, the boldness of wildcatters, and the ingenuity of the oil and gas industry in a unique way. These skills and attitudes built the modern world and will build our future cities and industries in space. As Midland once was the pathway to the western expansion of the United States, it will now be the pathway to humanity's expansion to space, making Midland one-of-a-kind place on Earth," he said. Harris said the Spaceport Development Corporation is a vehicle through which Midland can receive state funding for aerospace economic development. The Spaceport Development Corporation would use state funding to build additional infrastructure at the spaceport. Quote, "Having the Spaceport Development Corporation active in Midland puts us in a better position to show that we're serious about our spaceport development and we want to have this body active," Harris said. There are currently three active spaceport companies in Midland, AST Space Mobile, Firehawk Aerospace, and Kepler. Harris said Firehawk, which is testing rocket engines just outside Midland city limits, would benefit from the reestablishment of the Spaceport Development Corporation and expanded infrastructure. Midland County approved three representatives to serve on the board of the Spaceport Development Corporation. They chose County Judge Terry Johnson, Precinct 3 Commissioner Luis Sanchez, and Precinct 4 Commissioner Diane Anderson's husband, Ed Anderson. The city will elect four board members upon their approval of the corporation and interlocal agreement. Occidental Parkway Extension Project in the works. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council will decide Tuesday on the execution of an interlocal agreement with Midland County that will lead to the extension of Occidental Parkway in East Midland. The agenda packet item calls for the City of Midland to acquire the land for the extension of Occidental, starting west of Todd Road and winding to Arapaho Road. The City of Midland will also design the Occidental Parkway extension. The agreement also states that Midland County will construct the 1.8-mile extension of Occidental Parkway. The City of Midland previously reported during a briefing session that city and county staff have been working collaboratively on this project for a year and that the county has approved the interlocal agreement. Quote, the agreement had not been vetted by city council, city management, prior to the county's approval, the city noted. About the extension, City of Midland staff noted that the city, quote, needs an east-west corridor north of Loop 250 to provide better circulation for vehicular traffic movement to the newly established developments in Northeast Midland, end quote. The Midland City Council will meet at 10 a.m. Tuesday in council chambers at City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. City leaders to decide on road project with county. Council county project would construct road north of Horseshoe. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. An east-west road in South Midland, just north of Interstate 20, will be constructed according to a plan from the City of Midland and Midland County. The Midland City Council will vote Tuesday on authorizing the execution of an agreement with Midland County that calls for the City of Midland to construct Harris Road from Midkiff Road to Garfield Street. The agreement calls for Midland County to reimburse the city for the cost of construction that occurs outside of the boundaries of the city, estimated at $1.35 million. Harris Road initially will take travelers north of the Horseshoe Complex before bending south and then moving west again toward Midkiff Road. During a recent briefing session, it was reported that city and county staff have been working collaboratively on this project for 3 years. Quote, the City of Midland needs an east-west corridor north of I-20 to function as a backage road to provide better circulation for vehicular traffic movement in this growing area of Midland and to offset the loss of the two-way service road that TxDOT is converting to one-way, the city states in agenda packet documents. Heart surgeon Fraser returns to Midland for a fundraiser. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. One of the world's leading pediatric and congenital heart surgeons and a Midland native returns home for a fundraiser Wednesday at the Racquet Club. Dr. Charles Fraser, Jr., appointed as executive director of the Texas Center for Pediatric and Congenital Heart Disease at Dell Children's Medical Center in 2018, will appear at an event hosted by Dell Children's Foundation in partnership with Dell Medical School at the University of Texas at Austin. Quote, through the leadership of Midland native and internationally revered surgeon Dr. Charles D. Fraser, Jr., congenital heart care for children in Texas is being transformed through the Texas Center for Pediatric and Congenital Heart Disease, according to a news release about the event. The Heart Center at Dell Children's has operated on well over 1,500 children since 2019, including children from the community of Midland and throughout West Texas. The release calls the Midland High School graduate one of the world's leading pediatric and congenital heart surgeons and states he has fostered the development of nationally and internationally recognized pediatric heart and lung transplant and is the pioneer of life-saving first-in-human procedures and devices. Prior to joining Dell Children's, Fraser served at Texas Children's Hospital in Houston as senior surgeon of its congenital heart surgery program, ranked number one nationally by U.S. News and World Report, according to the news release. He also served as surgeon-in-chief of the hospital's surgical enterprise, leading more than 100 surgeons. Fraser attended Sam Houston Elementary, San Jacinto Junior High, Edison Freshman, now Midland Freshman, and graduated from Midland High School in 1976, according to a previous Reporter Telegram article. It was at Midland High when Fraser first had thoughts of becoming a doctor. One of his mentors was his own pediatrician, the late Dr. Brent Blankfist. Quote, He was an icon of pediatrics in Midland for many years, Fraser said. Definitely a role model as a physician, end quote. Fraser biography. Earned his medical degree from the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston. Completed a residency in surgery at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine and a fellowship in pediatric heart surgery at the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne, Australia. Developed dedicated programs in pediatric cardiac anesthesiology, perfusion, and cardiopulmonary transplantation, and is a long-standing advocate of public reporting of surgical outcomes and transparency. Has more than 300 peer-reviewed publications. Implanted the world's first DeBakey Child Cardiac Assist device and served as the national principal investigator of a first-ever pivotal multi-center pediatric ventricular assist device trial to assess the safety and benefits of the Berlin Heart Pediatric X-Score device. 3.8 magnitude quake strikes Monday. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. A 3.8 magnitude earthquake that took place around 1:14 a.m. Monday, northwest of Stanton, was one of two in the area, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. The USGS reported Monday that the stronger quake took place 12.4 miles northwest of Stanton and at a depth of 3.1 miles. The quake shook homes in northwest Midland. At 4:43 a.m., a 2.7 magnitude quake took place around 8.6 miles northwest of Stanton at a depth of 4.3 miles. The quakes were the third and fourth around Stanton going back to Thursday, according to EarthquakeTrack.com. The same website also showed the 3.8 magnitude quake was the strongest quake in the Midland region since February 17th, when a 4.7 magnitude quake struck east of Snyder. EarthquakeTrack.com reported Monday there had been 12 tremors in and around Midland in the past 30 days and 191 in the past 365 days. Midland County Sheriff's Office searches for impound yard burglary suspects. The story was written by Mercedes Cordero. The Midland County Sheriff's Office is seeking information on two Midland County impound yard burglary suspects. On March 29th, at about 12:55 a.m., two suspects cut the lock at the Midland County impound yard located at the intersection of Taylor and Henderson Streets in Midland County and stole a Yamaha Banshee four-wheeler. The suspects entered the yard in a white or light-colored Ford F-150 pickup truck. They loaded the four-wheeler into the back of the truck and left the area traveling southbound from Taylor and Lattice Street toward Interstate 20, according to a Midland Crime Stoppers Facebook post. If a person has information about the case, call the hotline, go to 694tips.com, or use the mobile app P3 Tips. A person could be eligible for a $1,000 cash reward if the tip leads to a suspect's arrest. No caller ID is used, and callers will remain anonymous. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Tuesday, April 11th. Pastor Emeritus John Frank Campbell, age 88, of Midland, passed away on Monday, April 3rd. A wake service will be held on Friday, April 14th, from 6 p.m., until 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Homegoing celebration will be Saturday, April 15th at 1 p.m. at New Jerusalem Baptist Church. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Laura Irvin, age 53, of Midland, passed away April 8th. The family will receive guests from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday, April 14th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, April 15th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Condolences may be sent to www.npwelch.com. Renee Delgado, age 62, of Midland, passed away on Thursday, April 6th. Visitation was held on Saturday, April 8th, from 9 a.m. until 3 p.m., with a chapel service at 2 p.m. at Avalos Sancho St. Thomas Funeral Home, 1502 North Lemisa Road in Midland. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sancho St. Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. R.T. White passed away on April 7th. A visitation will be held Thursday, April 13th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held on Friday, April 14th at 10 a.m. in the chapel of Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. Burial will take place on Friday, April 14th at 11 a.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland. Vera Dale Sparkman, age 87, of Midland, passed away April 7th. Graveside service will be held at 1 o'clock Wednesday, April 12th, at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, April 10th. Teacher vacancy recommendations appreciated. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Organizations like Raise Your Hand Texas and the Fast Growth School Coalition say recommendations issued by the State Teacher Vacancy Task Force are appreciated, but not surprising. Some should have been taken on years ago. Bob Popinski, Senior Director of Policy for Raise Your Hand Texas, said the conversation about the teacher workforce has been going on for some time, and there is a lot of meat to put on the bones of the overarching recommendations. Quote, "You're dealing with pay, with teacher culture, with how you train and prepare your teachers for the teacher workforce. So there's definitely a lot of moving pieces within these recommendations," Popinski said. He added that a lot of these conversations have been going on for years in Texas. Quote, "We have a teaching staff of roughly 375,000 teachers across the state, and we lose almost 37% of them by year five. We know we've had a teacher workforce issue for quite some time, so how do you attract teachers into the profession? How do you retain them, and how do you pay them a wage that will keep them in the profession, but also give them the support and the opportunities they need through mentorship programs in the process?" So what this sets out is, number one, they definitely understand that pay is an issue. Texas is currently $7,500 below the national average in teacher pay. That's one of their first recommendations. They didn't put a number on this. They just basically said, let's increase overall compensation through an increase to the basic allotment, Popinski said. That aligns with Raise Your Hand's recommendation to increase the basic allotment. Right now, the basic allotment is about $1,000 below where it needs to be, just to keep up with inflation since 2019. School districts don't have the same purchasing power as they did in 2019, and where about 50% of a school district budget goes toward teachers' salaries, that's a big driving force, so their recommendation to increase the basic allotment, which automatically triggers a certain percentage to go to teacher pay, is a good recommendation. We suggest that they increase that basic allotment by $1,000, and so that's the first big priority of this bill, he added. Next, he said, is to enhance total teacher compensation. Quote, they're looking at retirement benefits, health insurance, and how to improve that. That's much needed as well. They're trying to figure out how to incentivize teachers to go into hard-to-staff areas like bilingual and special education to be paid for their certification process, as well as how to improve the pipeline for pre-service preparation. Can we pay for scholarships for residency programs that allow teachers to have year-long residency programs and be paid for it in a way that they don't get a hit to their budget trying to be well-prepared and trained to be ready on day one, Popinski said. Grow your own programs were also recommended. Popinski said these need funding and staff to make sure you have the right staff to have these programs in place. Asked about the chances these recommendations will make it through the legislature, Popinski said there is a definite need. Quote, I think it is a priority not only in this organization, but a lot of organizations and leadership over at the Capitol to do something with teacher workforce. We know from the Charles Butt poll that was released that 77% of our teachers have considered leaving the profession, and that's just not sustainable to have teacher shortage areas. That's been systemic in our teacher workforce for quite some time, whether as special education teachers, bilingual teachers, or math teachers. We know that's been a problem, so in addition to teachers wanting to leave the profession because of pay and other support issues, he added. There are still roughly 3 months left in the legislative session and a lot of different opinions on how to do these things. Quote, there is enough funding to get this done. The state has a historic beginning balance, a historic revenue estimate moving forward. There is enough to pay our teachers more to get them on track on the national average. There are ways to bolster our high-quality traditional preparation programs. Right now, 16% of our teachers come from the ALT certification programs. Some of them have varying degrees of training our teachers to be ready. And so looking at that to make sure that we have high-quality teachers coming out of all preparation programs is going to be high on folks' minds, as well as doing a broad search for trying to attract teachers into the profession, Popinski said. I think a lot of these issues are going to have really deep conversations. We're just happy this elevated the conversation, but like I said at the beginning, there's a lot of meat to put on the bones, a lot of policy issues to be discussed. There's roughly 1,000 bills filed related to education issues every legislative session, and these alone are some pretty heavy lifts, end quote. The average teacher's salary in Texas is $57,600 a year. Popinski said, when you adjust that over the last 10 years for inflation, that's increased by a little under $2,000. He added that it varies by years of service. The basic allotment, which, raise your hand, also favors increasing, is the building block on how schools are funded. Quote, think of it as a $6,100, and that's what every student in the state starts with, and then you add on some student characteristics to that. So if you're a special needs student, or a student that qualifies for free and reduced lunch, or gets in gifted and talented programs, or bilingual programs, you can add on allotments to that, or add on weights to that, Popensky said. Once you start adding on the weights and allotments to that average, students average about $10,000 across the state. That can vary based on district or campus and student characteristics. On average, he said, it's about $10,000 per student. Attached to the basic allotment in Texas law is a provision that says any time the basic allotment is increased, a certain percentage of that increase has to go to teacher salary increases. Greg Smith, executive director of the Fast Growth School Coalition and former Clear Creek ISD superintendent, said his only concern about the recommendations is that they're probably 4 years later than what they needed to be. Quote, this is not a problem that is just in 2022-2023. This is a problem that folks have seen going on for several years, that the pipeline was drying up and people weren't getting into the education field, Smith said. He said he doesn't know if people just thought it would change overnight without the injection of any recommendations, but overall, it's a great starting point. Quote, they had the experts in the room with the teachers asking them, why are they staying? Why are they doing what they're doing? And then the autopsy report of why are people leaving the profession so early, Smith said. I think they addressed it from the financial standpoint in terms of salary compensation. Having said that, he thinks there are areas for improvement on the legislation part. Quote, I think there's the same thing for universities as well as school districts. I don't think it's just let's point a finger at the legislature. I think this is something that people need to be grabbing hold of with respect to their own educational environment, whether it's in your neck of the woods or whether it's mine. There's room for improvement, and it's going to take everyone working collectively to dig ourselves out of this. We're all pretty much to blame for putting us into this situation to begin with, end quote. Asked if COVID was an accelerant, Smith said he thinks so. Quote, it certainly revealed itself about how hard this is and the risks associated with it. It got to a point where it exacerbated the situation even more so. In our Fast Growth School Coalition, we really felt like there needed to be some sort of injection into the system for incentives and taking close looks at some things we can do better with respect to creating less stress on the teachers and creating more joy, Smith said. Many teachers in ECISD, for example, have 1 to 5 years of experience and 20 or more years, but not a lot in the middle. Quote, the mentor thing I think is important, and that was addressed. It's addressed, but it's addressed in name only. The devil's in the details on this, and what goes into being a mentor to help people through the turbulent times of starting out once you're handed the keys to the door. What does that look like? End quote. At Clear Creek, Smith said they gave teachers lesson plan guides starting out. Quote, I do think we need to look at opportunities to create some different mentoring opportunities for veteran teachers to work with incoming teachers and help them over the hump. I think what we've come to grips with is if you can find me someone that's kind, caring, compassionate, and willing to learn, we can teach you the content. So, if you can find that instructional aid, let's put them on the fast track to become a classroom teacher, Smith said. He added that if the governor, lieutenant governor, and speaker are on the same page, things like pay increases for teachers are going to get done. There are lots of questions about vouchers or education savings accounts. Smith said there is some research on vouchers in Arizona and Milwaukee that might indicate that vouchers are reducing the cost for students already in private schools. Quote, but as far as the actual movement of students from public schools to vouchers, and having an onslaught of reductions in student population, I think the jury's still out on that, Smith said. He added that this was a, quote, great wake-up call for the public school sector to realize that you're not a monopoly anymore, and you better make sure the services that you're providing to the kids, first and foremost, are going to be something that the community's proud of after tracking the data, end quote. Popinski said private schools educate 5.4 million kids. Quote, I think that the Universal Education Savings Account, or vouchers, are a conversation that's going to be had and it's going to impact public education. If it does pass, and our organization hopes that vouchers or ESAs are not passed, we think it's a bad state policy. It does siphon money away from public schools. Think of a small campus with four or five kids leaving for a voucher program. Those four or five kids are distributed across the campus in different grade levels, but by them leaving, the campus loses $10,000 per student. So $50,000 to some of these small rural campuses is a teacher's salary. Those campuses still have to have a teacher in every classroom. They still have to have a bus driver in every bus. They still have to have a cafeteria worker to help with food service, and so, yes, it does siphon off money from public schools and potentially including teachers and an impact on how you can staff up your teaching workforce within a campus or a school district, Popinski said. Career shift. Trainer makes jump to academia. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. After 20 years of practicing athletic training in a clinical setting, Brian Bobbier is now in his second year at University of Texas Permian Basin. Bobbier is clinical assistant professor and coordinator of clinical education for the athletic training program. Quote, this is a complete career shift for me. I spent the first 20 years of my athletic training career practicing in the clinical setting in a wide variety of places around the country and different patient populations. This is something that's really new, Bobbier said. The clinical settings include stops at the University of Houston, the University of Texas, Kansas State University, the Texas Rangers, and Miami Marlins. During his time in professional baseball, Bobbier served in various roles within the Rangers and Marlins organization, including rehabilitation coordinator and athletic training coordinator. An Oklahoma City native, Bobbier arrived at UTPB in 2021 after working as an educator and athletic trainer in the secondary school setting at Okarchi Public Schools in Okarchi, Oklahoma, the UTPB website said. While at Okarchi, he served on the Oklahoma Athletic Trainers Association Secondary Schools Committee and volunteered as a host athletic trainer for the NCAA Division I Women's College World Series in Oklahoma City. Quote, as the athletic training coordinator, you oversee the medical operations on the minor league side. You review draft medicals for the upcoming draft, free agent medical reviews, work on policy procedures, work hand-in-hand with the major league staff on players coming up and down, and implementing risk reduction techniques throughout the organization, Bobbier said. He did get to work one major league game. Quote, that was with the Texas Rangers. They came out to Arizona for a series against the Diamondbacks, and the spring training complex for the Rangers is out in Surprise, Arizona. So I did get to work one game with the Rangers in the big league team. That was fun. And then spring training, we all kind of shifted and got some time working the major league games because they usually have 60 to 70 players in major league camp right now. With just three athletic trainers, that's hard to do, so you kind of float back and forth and get that experience. When the guys get sent down, they kind of start getting back to normal staff, Bobbier said. Bobbier has played baseball since he was in kindergarten and loved the game ever since. He earned a bachelor's degree in professional studies from the University of Oklahoma, a master's in physical education with an emphasis in sports and fitness administration, and a Doctor of Athletic Training degree from A.T. Still University, Arizona School of Health Sciences, in 2022. Quote, "When I was at college, I just thought, you know, this might be an interesting career path. It was my sophomore year. I applied for a PBATS, which is a Professional Baseball Athletic Trainers Society summer internship. I was at home in Oklahoma City, and they have a AAA team, who at the time was affiliated with the Texas Rangers. That athletic trainer was Greg Harrell. Greg called me up and said, 'Hey, would you like to do a four-game series?' And I was like, 'Absolutely.' So I came up there and just did a quick four-game series and then kept in touch with Greg. Then my last 2 years at college at OU, I did summer internships with them," Bobbier said. All summer long, Bobbier was with Harrell for home games. His last year, Bobbier was with them until the 1st of July. He started his grad assistantship with the University of Houston. He continued keeping in touch with Harrell. In 2002, a year and a half into his graduate assistantship and working on his master's, Harrell called Bobbier and said if he was still interested in pro baseball, as they had a few openings in the organization. Bobbier sent his information to the coordinator at the time, Frank Velasquez, and from there, Bobbier was off. He added that it's a year-round job. Bobbier and his wife Jill have a daughter named Madison. Jill is a first-grade teacher at St. Mary's Central Catholic School. Bobbier added that the two of them have taught everywhere. He noted that traveling for professional teams involves a lot of wear and tear. Quote, "It's not really conducive for a good work-life balance because you're gone 6 or 7 months out of the year. You're not home very much, if at all. My wife and I adopted a little girl in 2018, and that kind of changed perspective of life for us. So that's when I decided to take a step back. Between 2018 and when I started here in 2021, I was working at a high school, working on my doctorate degree as a teacher and athletic trainer. That gave me a little bit more of a work-life balance for my family," Bobbier said. He added that he enjoyed the academic side. Quote, "It's fun, it's enjoyable, and I feel like I'm giving something back to the profession. Teaching students that want to be athletic trainers is very rewarding. It's a change of pace. It's still a lot of work with planning and putting together lessons and showing them hands-on skills and time management, but teaching future athletic trainers has been a joy. I get to be at home a little bit more, so that's a plus," Bobbier said. He added that his students at UTPB want to be there. Quote, "They've made a commitment to athletic training, human performance. They're very invested into their education. At the high school level, you had the classes. I taught anatomy, physiology, and sports medicine, which were essentially electives. Students were placed into those, and they may not have been wanting to be in there, and that's perfectly fine. But here, students are invested. They want to be in it. They are driven, and that's a great thing to see, because with the students we have, I know that the profession is in good hands moving forward," Bobbier said. He added that he's impressed with the staff, vision, and technology in athletic training and the related areas. Quote, "There's a lot of room for growth, and I think there's a lot of great ideas at this institution. Meeting with our program director and department chair, Alana Dennison, her vision for the program for the department as well drew me here. There's a collective effort seeing what everybody's vision is and what we want to take this program to was very enticing, Bobbier said. Dennison said Bobbier has been an instant asset to the faculty. Quote, his wealth of professional experience combined with his passion for athletic training and incredible commitment to our students has had a significant impact on our program. He has added a number of unique clinical education sites for our students to gain diverse experiences and has been instrumental in the development of our Master of Science in Athletic Training program. We are very thankful to work alongside Brian and appreciate all of the incredible things he brings to our program and university, Dennison said. Clinical Assistant Professor M. Spencer Kane said Bobbier is an awesome individual to work with. Quote, his robust clinical practice experience has allowed us to collaborate in various innovative ways in both our academic programs and research studies here at UT Permian Basin, she said. One change at a time, walking. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. Last year, for Valentine's Day, my husband, at my request, got me a standing desk for my office. A year later, I can honestly say it's one of the best gifts I have ever gotten. I am still in a bit of awe how much I like standing instead of sitting at my desk, and how much better I feel. You'd think it would be the opposite, but my back rarely hurts now, my knees and ankles feel way better, and once I got an anti-fatigue mat to stand on, like they use in commercial kitchens, my feet don't hurt either. The first week I had the standing desk, every single day I doubled my step and calorie goals on my fitness tracker to the point where now my goal is about 3 times where it was before I received this desk. I think all of this is happening because I really don't stand. I shift my weight around, I pace, I step back and forth as I think and type. I am rarely still in my office, unlike when I was sitting in a chair all the time. Basically, having a standing desk has increased my walking, and walking has enormous health benefits. As we continue discussing one change at a time, things you can do to improve health, walking is another small change that can provide big health benefits. There are some benefits to walking that I don't think will surprise you. Walking helps burn calories, which in turn can help you lose or maintain your weight. The number of calories depends on walking speed, the distance, the terrain. Walking up and down hills burns more calories than walking on a flat surface, and your weight. One benefit to walking when it comes to weight was surprising. According to Harvard Medical School, walking counteracts weight-promoting genes. People who walked briskly for about an hour per day showed half the effects of weight-producing genes than those who did not walk routinely. Those aren't the only wins on the weight side either. Walking has also been shown to lower blood sugar, and again, surprisingly, in a study from Exeter University, has shown to decrease cravings for an intake of sweets. Walking 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, can reduce the risk of coronary heart disease by up to 19%. More walking can reduce the risk of heart disease even more. Walking doesn't just decrease the risk of death from heart disease, it reduces death risk for all causes. In an Australian study, regular walking at an average pace decreased the risk of death by 20%, and walking at a brisk or fast pace, at least 4 miles per hour, reduced death risk by 24%. Walking improves your immune system. In a study of over 1,000 people, found that those that walked at least 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, had 45% fewer sick days than those that walked less than once a week. They also found that when those folks did get sick, they tended to have milder symptoms and return to wellness more quickly. This may be why women who walk 7 or more hours per week have a 14% lower risk for breast cancer, and this benefit transfers to women at high risk for breast cancer as well. As I have noticed with my standing desk, walking eases joint pain. That is because walking helps lubricate joints and strengthens the muscles that support our joints. Walking 5 to 6 miles per week has shown to help prevent arthritis. Walking boosts energy and improves mood. Studies have shown a brisk walk when someone is tired increases their level of energy better than a cup of coffee. That is because walking increases our energy hormones. Walking also increases oxygen levels in cells. Studies also show that walking 30 minutes 3 days a week reduces anxiety, depression, and negative moods. It has also been shown to boost self-esteem and reduces symptoms of social isolation. A recent study with several experiments found that people who were trying to think of new ideas performed better when walking than when sitting. That creativity increased even more when people walked outdoors. Finally, walking will tone and shape your legs. Walking on hills and combining with cross-training activities like cycling and resistance exercises increases those benefits. The best part of walking is all those benefits don't require an expensive gym membership or a trainer or any special equipment beyond a pair of well-fitting, sturdy shoes. Walking can be broken up throughout your day, too, which means it is time-efficient. Consider adding walking to your daily routine and make that one change to improve your overall health. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Monday Coffee. Tenacious Woman Ministries has scheduled coffee chats for women from 9 a.m. to noon Mondays through May 29th. There will be a perfect chance to connect with other women and build meaningful relationships over a cup of coffee. Visit tinyurl.com/3T8ENUJZ. Health Support Group. Midland Health has scheduled a free diabetic and cardiovascular health support group from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. on the second Monday of every month at First Baptist Church, 2104 West Louisiana Avenue in Midland. For more information, call 432-221-2285 or email morgan.tennis@midlandhealth.org. Police Fundraiser. Bubba's 33 at 6153 East Highway 191 has scheduled a statewide fundraiser benefiting the Texas Municipal Police Association all day today. For every guest who mentions the fundraiser, restaurants will donate 10% of total proceeds to the organization. Visit bubbas33.com. Free Tax Assistance. The Ector County Northside Senior Center at 1225 Adams Avenue has scheduled free tax assistance for seniors from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesday. No appointment is required. For more information or to make an appointment, call 432-337-5281. West Texas Jazz Party. The West Texas Jazz Society will present the 57th Annual West Texas Jazz Party, June 2nd and 3rd, at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, Devonian Ballroom, 305 East 5th Street. Evening concerts will take place from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m., June 2nd and 3rd, and a brunch concert will be from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Artists scheduled to perform: John Eric Kelso, Harry Allen, William Anderson, Peter Anderson, Dan Barrett, Daniela Soledad, Nate Nahar, Rebecca Kilgore, Frank Tate, Richard Simon, Chuck Redd, Ricky Malici, Johnny Varl, Brian Piper, Rossano Sportiello, and more. For tickets or more information, visit tinyurl.com/7h2xjxs5. Odessa's Got Talent 2023. Permian Basin Mission Center will present Odessa's Got Talent. We'll present Odessa's Got Talent at 7:30 p.m. June 17th at the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue. Watch the best of the best compete live in front of a panel of distinguished judges for more than $8,000 in cash prizes. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/4fnhjz77. One Change at a Time, Walking. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. Last year, for Valentine's Day, my husband, at my request, got me a standing desk for my office. A year later, I can honestly say it's one of the best gifts I have ever gotten. I am still in a bit of awe how much I like standing instead of sitting at my desk, and how much better I feel. You'd think it would be the opposite, but my back rarely hurts now, my knees and ankles feel way better, and once I got an anti-fatigue mat to stand on, like they use in commercial kitchens, my feet don't hurt either. The first week I had the standing desk, every single day I doubled my step and calorie goals on my fitness tracker, to the point where now my goal is about 3 times where it was before I received this desk. I think all of this is happening because I really don't stand. I shift my weight around, I pace, I step back and forth as I think and type. I am rarely still in my office, unlike when I was sitting in a chair all the time. Basically, having a standing desk has increased my walking, and walking has enormous health benefits. As we continue discussing one change at a time, things you can do to improve health, walking is another small change that can provide big health benefits. There are some benefits to walking that I don't think will surprise you. Walking helps burn calories, which in turn can help you lose or maintain your weight. The number of calories depends on walking speed, the distance, the terrain. Walking up and down hills burns more calories than walking on a flat surface, and your weight. One benefit to walking when it comes to weight was surprising. According to Harvard Medical School, walking counteracts weight-promoting genes. People who walked briskly for about an hour per day showed half the effects of weight-producing genes than those who did not walk routinely. Those aren't the only wins on the weight side either. Walking has also been shown to lower blood sugar, and again, surprisingly, in a study from Exeter University, has shown to decrease cravings for an intake of sweets. Walking 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, can reduce the risk of coronary heart disease by up to 19%. More walking can reduce the risk of heart disease even more. Walking doesn't just decrease the risk of death from heart disease, it reduces death risk for all causes. In an Australian study, regular walking at an average pace decreased the risk of death by 20%, and walking at a brisk or fast pace, at least 4 miles per hour, reduced death risk by 24%. Walking improves your immune system. In a study of over 1,000 people, found that those that walked at least 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, had 45% fewer sick days than those that walked less than once a week. They also found that when those folks did get sick, they tended to have milder symptoms and return to wellness more quickly. This may be why women who walk 7 or more hours per week have a 14% lower risk for breast cancer, and this benefit transfers to women at high risk for breast cancer as well. As I have noticed with my standing desk, walking eases joint pain. That is because walking helps lubricate joints and strengthens the muscles that support our joints. Walking 5 to 6 miles per week has shown to help prevent arthritis. Walking boosts energy and improves mood. Studies have shown a brisk walk when someone is tired increases their level of energy better than a cup of coffee. That is because walking increases our energy hormones. Walking also increases oxygen levels in cells. Studies also show that walking 30 minutes 3 days a week reduces anxiety, depression, and negative moods. It has also been shown to boost self-esteem and reduces symptoms of social isolation. A recent study with several experiments found that people who were trying to think of new ideas performed better when walking than when sitting. That creativity increased even more when people walked outdoors. Finally, walking will tone and shape your legs. Walking on hills and combining with cross-training activities like cycling and resistance exercises increases those benefits. The best part of walking is all those benefits don't require an expensive gym membership or a trainer or any special equipment beyond a pair of well-fitting, sturdy shoes. Walking can be broken up throughout your day, too, which means it is time-efficient. Consider adding walking to your daily routine and make that one change to improve your overall health.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.